Where do the misfits go when they want to fit in? Cause I'm feeling alone. Where do the oddballs roll and the psychos swim? Cause I want to fit in.
Welcome back to The Everyday Actor. I'm your host, Emma Dayton Peterson, and this is episode 2. Before we get started with today's interview, I did just want to let you guys know that I'm starting to upload different resources, tips, and tricks, and little tidbits about the industry that I think would be helpful to all actors. They're going to be posted on our Instagram, which is EverydayActorPod. So if you want to keep up with those, make sure you are following us. Today we get to hear from my wonderful friend Alyssa, who also happens to be the artist for our theme song. Alyssa and I actually met a few years ago when we were both working as princesses for a princess party company. And since then, we've always stayed in contact with one another, supporting each other's careers, and even meeting up weekly to work on some acting skills together. It's so important to have friends like this in Hollywood. In this episode, we really get into detail about the union, your rights as an actor, some of her best and worst experiences while auditioning, and so much more. I learned a lot from Alyssa, and I know you will too. And without further ado, here's Alyssa. Alyssa, welcome to my podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. I think it's so great that you're doing this about, quote unquote, the everyday actor, because a lot of people, including myself, when we're growing up, we don't realize that there is somewhat of a middle class in acting. And, you know, people will try and discourage you because they think that, you know, not everyone can be a star. But what they don't tell you is that there are a million ways to, quote unquote, make it in Hollywood that don't have to do with being a star whatsoever. And you can create your life any way you want.
Absolutely. Middle class. That's such a good way to put it. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of how I feel. It's like I'm doing well. A lot of people feel like that. We're doing everything we can. We're doing the everyday grind of it, but nobody ever talks about that. So that's kind of that's my goal with this. Like how do we show people who are either interested in Hollywood, getting into Hollywood, that it's not always glamorous? But you also don't have to be famous to have made it, enjoy yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, as if I were younger and we had podcasts like this, like this would have been everything to me. And something that there's a podcast about songwriters and producers and artists on that end of the spectrum called And the Writer Is. And it's not as much like everyday songwriters, but it is songwriters who have become successful, who talk about their journey and everything. And that really helped me on, you know, because obviously I'm an actor and a musician, and that really helped me realize, hey, my goals actually aren't unattainable. I can totally do this and I'm on the right track. And
absolutely.
So, and especially I've been in LA for 8 years now, and I started asking my parents if I could get an agent when I was 3. So, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I feel like I have just about every piece of advice I could give, because I've done everything. I've done film, TV, network TV, web series TV. I've done too many commercials to count. You know, I've done the background work. I've, you know, just all the different aspects of it.
Let's just kind of start from the beginning. Where are you from? How did this all get started for you?
Okay, so where am I from is always a tough question, because while I was born in Detroit, and I think you know this, so I was born in Detroit, but then I moved to, not me, just myself, my family, and moved to Japan when I was 3. We lived in Yokohama, Japan, and we lived there for 3 years. And when we were there, my older brother was in like a bowling league or class or something. And when he would do his practice, my mom would always take me to the little library they had there, and they had VHS tapes, and you could watch a VHS while someone else was doing something. And I saw the VHS for Cats, and I was like, oh, I want that. And I just thought it was about cats, you know? And I watched it, and I told my mom afterwards that I wanted to be Mrs. Mistopheles, because there's a character called Mr. Mistopheles. And she was like, well, honey, that's not a real person. Also, he's portraying a cat. Also, that's something called an actor and a singer. Like, that's his job. And I was like, hold up. This guy gets paid to pretend he's a cat and dance and sing? And just be a cat. where do I sign up? Then after that, we moved to England and we lived in the Midlands there. My dad is an engineer in the automotive industry. And so he, whenever he would get a new project, we would move to whatever country was manufacturing that product. So when we moved there, we lived about a 2-hour train ride away from London. And I was begging my mom to get me an agent in London. She did not want me to do that. She didn't want me to be a child actor. She saw, you know, kind of the destruction that happens in some, not all, some child actors' lives after they, you know, kind of finish that. And some get themselves back on the right path, some don't. And she just didn't want that for me, which I completely respect. But that didn't stop her from letting me pursue my dreams in a learning and creative environment. And we kind of moved back and forth from England to America. And I did community theater when we were back in America. And then once we moved back to America permanently, we were right there, Farmington Hills, Michigan. And I, again, wanted my mom to get me an agent. And I did get a like local Detroit agent. Came out to LA for an apartment, or not apartment hunting, for college hunting, like looking at different colleges. I looked at UCLA, USC, and Pepperdine, and Santa Monica Community College. While we were here, I asked my mom again about the agents thing, right? When I had that agent in Michigan, I did some background work on a movie that was filming there. And then I did auditions for bigger movies. Like I auditioned for True Grit. And I was so excited, but I didn't get it. Obviously, Haley Steinfeld did. Good job, Haley. Proud of you. But yeah, we came out here anyway for just looking at colleges. And I asked my mom, I was like, please, will you let me submit to agents while we're here? And she was like, okay. Like in her brain, she's like, you're not going to get an agent in the like 3 weeks we're here. Okay. Well, I did. I got an agent.
Okay.
And yeah.
Okay. We're going to have to hear that whole story.
Really, all I did was send, I had like my mom's friend was a quote unquote photographer. I had her take like some headshots of me that were not headshots. Like they were just pictures, but she had always been taking my quote unquote headshots, you know, when I had the Michigan agent and all that. And so I had some of those pictures. I put them in, we lived in like this small apartment building where the people who lived below us was also a mom with like actor kids. And she had friends who were moms with actor kids. And I was 17 at the time, so technically still a kid, you know, and they gave us tons of advice, which was really nice. They said, you know, print out your 8x10s and put them in an envelope with a clear like panel. And so that's what I did. I put my headshot, resume, cover letter in these envelopes and filled them up and sent them and sent emails. And I heard back from one. I did either a scene or a monologue. I really don't remember. Although I will just say as a general tip, everyone who's listening, agents, managers, casting directors, anyone when they're meeting you for a general meeting, prefer scenes 9 times out of 10 because they can see how you'd interact in a real audition rather than a monologue that is just you playing off of yourself that you could have memorized 10 million times. So definitely have a monologue because some people do prefer them. Have one ready, but just know in general that most of the time they're going to want two contrasting scenes, meaning drama and comedy.
What would that look like in a meeting?
So basically, oh my gosh, I've done so many because I switched after having that agent, I switched to a different well, she was technically a manager. It was a whole thing. She was a manager with an agency license. It was very specific. Right. Yeah. And so I switched to a new manager eventually. And then I had an agent who dropped me after a week, which was that's a whole other thing. It's crazy. Yeah. And then I ended up, you know, doing – went and I met with before my current agents, AEFH, love them, Amsel, Eisenstadt, Fraser, and Joseph, but everyone just calls them AEFH. Before I signed with AEFH, I met with Abrams as well. And that was like, that's probably like the biggest agency that I had a meeting with. They did offer to sign me, but they were like, just so you know, for SAG projects, there's a rule where we can only submit 3 actors. And we do have 3 other girls who have like your same red hair, pale skin, and they're like your type. So just so you know, on those projects, you would be our 4th girl. Like we wouldn't submit you. So we just want to let you know up front, we want you, but we don't want. And that was really great of them, honestly, because they could have just tried to keep me for themselves. And they were just like, just so you know, we love you. But this is what's happening. And so I ended up going
with
Amy.
All you can ask for is honesty in that kind of situation. Yes. So you can make a good decision.
Yeah. But basically every agency meeting kind of goes the same. You or manager, whatever it may be, most of them, you go into the office, you know, so maybe they've received your headshot in the mail through the clear envelope. Honestly, I feel like people don't do that anymore because this was 8 years ago. People probably don't do that, which is either it's kind of like, it can go one of two ways. There's one thing where it's like, no one does that anymore. So if you're going to do it, you will stand out. But
well, they definitely do it. It's just not as common. So you're right. There is
something to it of, you know, maybe it'll, you know, help you. Cause then you can say in your email, I also sent a hard copy just in case you want to, you know, get a closer look at my resume or, you know, you can whatever and call totally. Follow up. Like that's the biggest thing is follow up. Like it's okay to annoy them a tiny bit, not a lot. But like you can send the thing in the mail, you can send an email, you can call, and then you can do a follow-up on one of those things. Like don't send a follow-up email and a follow-up call. Do just one of the other. But yeah, so you go into a meeting. They kind of ask you about yourself, your history. You go over your resume. You might talk about your training that you've had, any experience you've had. And you just kind of get to know each other. And then they might say, okay, so great. Like, do you have a scene that you've got? Sometimes they'll ask you up front when they ask you for a meeting, say, please come with two contrasting scenes or come with a monologue. Sometimes they'll do that. If not, always go with two contrasting scenes and ideally two contrasting monologues prepared. You can just have one monologue. Like I said, you probably won't need the monologue. And then they'll be your reader, reader meaning they're going to be your scene partner. And they'll have the scene, you do the scene with them, and sometimes they'll let you know in the meeting that they want to sign you. Sometimes they have to discuss it with their partner or whoever might be in the office, and then they'll call you. Honestly, all except that one who like got me and then dropped me in a week, which was super weird. I think she was like, I really don't know what happened with that.
In over her head or something. You'll never know.
Well, that's, she was also like really mean to me at our agency meeting. Like she asked me, so sometimes they'll also ask you this. They'll be like, what is the dream? This is actually really good. You want to know, first of all, you want to know your limits when you go in to an agent because they might ask you, okay, do you like, they might say like, are you opposed to soap operas? And you have to like opt in or out of soap operas half the time, which by the way, highly recommend soaps to anyone. Like oh, don't highly. Turn it down. It's actor boot camp. So I've gotten very close several times to getting like a really great role on soap where it's like recurring and I'm like, oh, this is it. This is my break. This is God is giving me this opportunity so I can have a steady job for 3 years and then it doesn't happen. And anyway, but it's fine. That's just life. That's
welcome
that's
to
Hollywood.
LA.
Yep. That's Hollywood. So yeah, they'll also ask you about like nudity and things like that. You need to know your limits with that because otherwise you'll get auditions that you read through the script and you're like, whoa. I mean, like I've had an audition where they have genuinely attempted to get me to like take off my shirt. And I'm like,
In the audition.
And I'm like, no, you know, and you just say like, do not be afraid to say no and walk right out because anyone who's trying to do that does not matter in this industry. Anyone who's reputable True. Does not do that. You do not want to be on a set with people who like, trust me, if they're willing to do that in an audition, imagine what they're willing to do once you're in a contract and they're paying you.
That's a good point. And if there is something like that, you are told in advance. You're never Yes. blindsided with anything regarding nudity. You shouldn't ever be.
In that scenario, they were like, okay, so did you get the script? I was like, no, you guys only sent me the sides. Like my agent, well, they only sent my agent or manager the sides. And they're like, oh man, I wish they would have given you the script. Yeah, so there's definitely nudity in it, and we might need, you know, nothing crazy, but today we might need to just, like, see, and they, like, start, and I was like, whoa, goodbye, walked out and called, and this is really important. If you have representation, call your reps right after and let them know immediately, and then if it's a SAG project, if it's a union project, even if you are non-union, you call SAG and you report it. You being union has nothing to do with how producers under a SAG agreement act. They're not allowed to do that. So like safety is number one. SAG-AFTRA has tons of resources. They have a department for everything. You can go online and search SAG-AFTRA phone numbers list and there's a PDF. If you're working on a SAG set, or a union set, even if you are non-union and there's something unsafe, you call the union, they'll come out. Once I joined SAG-AFTRA, I fell in love and I realized immediately that everyone saying anything negative about the union was you know, just trying to get you to be in their project for less. I have friends who have done non-union agreements where they have a conflict for the rest of their career now because they agreed to an in perpetuity, which means forever, agreement on, for example, a meal kit delivery service. Now they can't do Blue Apron because they did Freshly or whatever it may be.
Oh, interesting.
You always want to check conflicts. Do not take a $1,000 paying gig because that feels like a lot of money at the time. I promise you it's not. Let's backtrack so that I can kind of explain how I've garnered this knowledge through experience. So for a whole year, I did not get any jobs. Nothing. I think maybe I did one student film. So I got a manager through a showcase that they would do at our acting school for kids. And so they have tons of agents and managers that would come and watch. And I do recommend, like, anything that's like a showcase for agents and managers, I actually do recommend to anyone. That's how I got my next agents as well. Casting director workshops, I know, are very iffy. And it's honestly, like, you know, when that whole system got taken down, I was kind of like, yeah, because I never experienced anything great from a casting director workshop. And I did so many. I wasted so much money. But with the agents and managers, it is really how a lot of times they find new people. There was this woman named Tracy who ran casting director and agent workshops. And she was just the sweetest person ever. She's from New York. She had this thick accent and she only worked with really reputable people. And that's where I went for. And those casting director workshops were great. So finding like a reputable place where you just get a good vibe from the people, that's really important. But anyway, so I got my manager and then I booked my first commercial and that was my first job ever. And this is really funny though, because I got an email saying that I was on a veil and I thought that I didn't know what on a veil meant. And so I thought I booked it. So I told everyone that I booked this commercial before I actually officially booked it. Thank the Lord in heaven that I did book it, because otherwise that would have been real embarrassing, because the reason I was so excited is that it was for the Google Pixel phone. So it was a Google commercial. And the funniest thing is the audition was for the role of, quote, young bride. And I was only 18. And I was like, okay, but this goes to prove why you should never like turn down an audition or snub your nose at it or think that it's stupid for you to go to it. Or you're like, oh, that's so rude. I'm young. How could they think I look old enough to be a bride or something? Because they ended up casting me as a bridesmaid. And it's in when it comes to commercials, you don't get paid any differently if you're the lead in the commercial or a supporting person in the commercial. There's no such thing as lead or supporting in a commercial. It's just principal and extra. That's it. So if you are, they also sometimes refer to quote unquote the lead as the hero of the commercial. And so that just means that's the person they're following throughout the commercial. Again, it means nothing. When it comes to residuals, you all make the same unless your agents have negotiated something different, but it's very unlikely. But this commercial was non-union. And back then, and I'll just go out and say it, I really don't care. I think I made like $3,000 as my base fee and then like $1,500 as the what's it called when you get a fee to cover instead of residuals for 2 years? Yeah, it's like a usage fee. I think this is what they call it. They probably just call it a usage fee.
They do a usage fee and then they do an agency fee.
Well, separate now. Like, sometimes.
Not always. Let me clarify. Not always.
And also, just so you know, that is sometimes used as incentive for the agents, and your agents can and will still take 10%. I have never had an agency fee that has not been double dipped on, if that makes sense. Yes. So where my agent or manager takes the 10%, technically my agent takes 10%. Agents legally cannot take more than 10%. Don't sign with an agency if they want to charge you or if they are trying to get you for more than 10%. They are not accredited, and that is illegal in the state of California. Literally illegal. Whereas my manager does take 15%, but managers, that's more common. I would kind of shy away from 20%. Just be careful.
That is high. It's unusually high. So make sure you know make sure it's a legit.
So like my manager, though, for example, he took 20% of non-union work and 15% of union work. So at the time, you know, it was 20%, and there was a plus 10% on it. But anyone who's listening to this, or even you, Emma, where you're seeing non-union stuff all the time for commercials, you'll know that that is a really high fee. $3,000 plus $1,500. Now, back then, that was standard. But because they keep getting actors to do non-union work, the rates keep going, getting lower and lower and lower. I saw a huge Fortune, like Fortune 100 company, wanting to pay $500 total for a commercial, for someone to be in a commercial. That was day rate and usage. Literally run. It's not worth it. That's what I'm saying. Oh, yeah. It's not.
I actually recently listened to another podcast similar in style to this one. And they talked a lot about the union, things I have never heard of. So I'll make sure to include that in show notes as well. And then I'll send it to you as well. There's so much information that I have never heard.
Oh, and the best part is that SAG will give you all that info. Like, you can call them and just be like, hey, I'm thinking of joining. What do you guys do? And there's people there whose job it is to answer the phones and talk to you. Like, literally, they have a relief fund going right now for COVID-19. And I just applied. And if I wasn't a union member, I wouldn't qualify for that. But also, I was really confused about the application. And obviously, they're getting lots of calls about this. But I called, didn't even have that long of a wait time. The guy was so nice. And I was like, I know you're really busy and you have a lot of calls. He's like, no, slow down. It's fine. Don't worry. And answered all my questions. And they even, something SAG did is they allowed dues to be paid in you already pay your dues in two payments a year, one in the spring, one in the fall. They actually allowed this spring payment to be deferred to July for the first payment. And then the next one is, I believe, due in September. And so it's actually this half of this year is split up into two more halves. So I only have to pay a quarter at a time. I'm rolled in that.
Oh, good.
They also have free acting classes that you can sign up for. They have free casting director workshops. They have a voiceover studio that you can use. They literally, I mean, oh, gosh, I just can't say enough good things about the union. Anyway, that commercial was great. They had a two-year run or whatever, and I did tons more commercials. My biggest union one before I joined the union was for Best Buy. And I was so excited because when you get a SAG national commercial, and I was only 19 at this time. I mean, that is like, people tell you that's the holy grail. That's where you're going to get tons of money. Well, it was for back to school. They shot three different scenarios for the back to school. Mine was about, it was actually great that they used girls. So they used girls and it was like STEM, science, technology, engineering, math. We were doing like sciencey stuff. And yeah, it was really fun. I met a friend there and, you know, meeting friends on set is number one. Highly recommend. It was great because actually, so this is a good example of the union. She knew the union rules on that we were required to be in a covered space with air conditioning in when it's over a certain number of degrees. And we were not being provided that. We were being like put under a tent basically. And it was like 100 degrees out in the valley. And she just went up to the AD and said, hey, so per SAG rules, we're supposed to have this. Where can we go? And they cleared out. They made producers go out of the trailer because they didn't have a trailer. So they opened this one room in the trailer and they let us hang out in there because it's required. And if they would have said no, there's a SAG emergency hotline where you call them, they bring a SAG rep out and they would have gotten a fine even. It's possible. Basically, I was like, yes, I have made bank. And actually, okay, this is crazy. So when I booked that commercial, I'd only been working for our princess company for about 2 weeks. And I was so confident that this commercial was going to make me so much money that I quit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then, ha ha, joke's on you, Alyssa. They, like I said, they did three scenarios. They only ran one on TV. Mine and the other one, they ran online only. And unfortunately, the SAG rules for online are still a little outdated, and it's just a one-time usage fee for like a year, and it's like $1,200. A Best Buy commercial that I used to get texts from my friends every single day for months saying they saw me on Hulu or YouTube, I made like not even $2,000.
That's crazy.
Which was really sad, and so obviously I started princessing again. And we do what we have to do. But I also, I teach music lessons as well. I teach young actors as well. It's really fun to be able to do that. I then booked a show for the CW Seed, which is their online platform. And I was so excited because it was like the CW, you know, I got to put the CW seed on my resume, but nonetheless, at least it said the CW, right? That was actually non-union. And I made $300 from the CW.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Well, yeah. So for new actors, this does seem like a lot of money. Like $2,000 seems like a lot. But the amount of money that these companies have that they're getting and that how expensive LA is.
Oh, and this is something that's very important that I want to put out there. A lot of people will say, oh, you worked on a commercial for one day and now you made X amount of dollars. Wow, you only had to do one day of work. No, you did not. I have trained my entire life and auditioning is my job. If I wasn't willing to go to these auditions, if all of us all of a sudden said, nope, we're only going to jobs we book, the entire industry would collapse. There's no way that the industry exists without actors who are willing to drop everything at a moment's notice and go to an audition. So whenever someone, if someone tries to make you feel bad about how much you make as an actor on one project, do not let them, because you never know when your next paycheck is going to come. And you have to be able to sustain a lifestyle where you can leave during the day and go to an audition, like drive to Santa Monica from the Valley at 4 p.m. on a Tuesday, which I've had to do. And it was very difficult, but I made it.
Brutal.
You know, so, and I get in my head sometimes about that too. And I feel guilty because currently, so, well, let me continue. So I booked that. Then I booked a show called Adam Ruins Everything, which is an infotainment show. So it's classified slightly differently. It was on True TV. It's now on Netflix. You can check it out. I'm in the one about the internet. I'm in it for about 2 seconds. Blink and you'll miss me. But it was my first co-star role on a major network show. And it was the biggest deal ever to me. And it was so important and fabulous. And again, I made $300. It was union though, but because it's infotainment, it's different. So none of these jobs had paid for, and like barely, you know, I think I'd paid maybe 2 months of rent.
All the time you're putting into auditioning for all the other jobs too.
Oh, yeah. And also, I cannot tell you how many jobs I've come in second for where I have put in well over 80 hours of work. Just this last fall, I had a film. Oh, man, it's still like I shake when I talk about it. Like it hurts. Oh, it hurts. But that's okay. It wasn't meant to be in my path. But it
wasn't meant to be.
Yeah. It was a film about it was based on a true story, and I'd be playing a songwriter, and that meant so much to me. And she was a real person, is a real person. She's not dead. So I studied everything I could. I found every YouTube video she'd ever made. I mean, I did journal work. I did imagination work. I did literally everything. There was a song title referenced in the script where, that I couldn't find online. I didn't even think I'd have to play it in the audition or anything, but I just wrote a song with that title so that I could feel like I wrote that song and be in that role.
That's awesome.
And I put in a lot of work. I had an audition, and then I had they called it a producer session in my email, but it was with not just the producers. It was with the producers, the writers, and the director. And the director was also, he's also an actor. And so getting to work with him was a huge deal for me. And literally it's like this session went the best I'd ever had anything go. They wanted to hear the song of the title in there, you know. And so I did it, and they're like, wait, you wrote that this morning? Which I had wrote that this morning. I wrote it before my session because I couldn't focus on anything else that day. Because when you have a session with a huge actor that's directing a huge movie that you're going in for a producer session for, you can't focus on things. And so I played it and they all were like so impressed. And the director even asked, he's like, if it's okay, can I send this tape to the real, you know, blank, the real person who I was portraying? And I was like, oh my gosh, yes. Well, even though I was the exact look, perfect match, everything, they kept saying I was in the mix. They already had an offer out to a girl from Disney Channel. It's looking at those situations as a win rather than a loss that keeps you in the game. Mm-hmm. That was a win. I was the second choice. I was literally, other than a huge name actor who is a household name from Disney Channel, I was the second choice. Not anyone else, me. And all that means is that I'm still going to be in that director's head, those producers' heads. They're going to want me. I put in that work and it wasn't in vain. That was it was a huge, you know, studio film. But every time I look back at these things, I'm like, oh, now I realize I would have been really sad if I booked that film, did it, it was supposed to come out this summer, and then it got delayed. That would have made this quarantine even harder for me.
That's true.
And this quarantine has not been easy on me. You know, this year I was contacted by American Idol, and which I've been contacted by American Idol, The Voice, a million times. Like, I've done it a couple times where, you know, you go and then the producers at some level, eventually you get axed and it's like, okay, whatever. This was my first year where it was the executive casting director that wanted me. I was referred by an A&R I work with, and I got to the stage where you were in the show, and I went, and I was sort of torn to shreds, not for my arts, but for personal reasons, like for not putting enough pain, quote unquote, into my music. Because in my story, I have a history of being sexually assaulted, and they wanted to see that. Rather, I came in too bubbly, so Katy Perry said, and that's fine, whatever. I don't let my tragedy define me. I am a survivor, not a victim. There's a difference. I've released music about my sexual assault. You can check it out. It's called Shattered. There's also a website called Shattering the Statistics. I can't say statistics. There we go.
There you go.
Shatteringthestatistics.org that I created, which has resources for anyone who is either going through this or who is supporting someone who has gone through this. And I guarantee you, even if you think you don't know anyone who's had who's been sexually assaulted, 1 in 4 women will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. So if you know 4 women, you know someone who has been sexually assaulted. Chances are. I mean, it's crazy. I've been told I'm too bubbly my whole life. And too talkative and too energetic, too loud, whatever. But you know what? That's what makes me a good performer. It's what makes me a good writer, because I have so many words that come out of my mouth, because I'm a songwriter too. It's what makes me, you know, when I produce music, when I hear a sound that I love that's meant for that song, you know, when you're going through sounds, you go through a million sounds, like I know it because it gets me so excited and I get this gut feeling. And if I wasn't capable of feeling that, then I wouldn't be as good of a producer as I am. And if I wasn't capable of being exuberant and feeling everyone's feelings around me, which is a burden sometimes, but I wouldn't be the actor I am. I think we're up to the point where I'd booked Adam Ruins Everything. I went into this audition for a show called Dear White People on Netflix. It was a co-star role, and I messed up my lines in the audition. I messed up a line, and I was so upset with myself because I felt like – I just felt like I – it was for a character that was very right wing, and like they called her like a younger Ann Coulter. And I was like, oh, I know this witch, for lack of a better term, you know, wink, wink. I was like, oh, I can do this, you know? And I was so excited and a little nervous for the audition that I flubbed a line, and I really thought I blew my shot. And I called my mom after, and I was like, Mom, literally the only way I'm going to book this is if God performs a miracle. Like, I just don't think I booked it. I booked it off that first audition. I didn't even have a callback.
Really? No callback?
Yep, I booked it. And that became my first recurring co-star. I got to be on 2 episodes of that show. It was, and I did, that was my first time doing ADR, which is additional dialogue reading. It's where you go into a soundstage. Sometimes it's a smaller booth, but most of the time it's a big room, and you watch the whatever you filmed, and you have to fill in a line. Maybe they've changed a line. Maybe they're taking a line away from someone else and making you say it because it fits more your character. Whatever it may be, you go in and you add some extra lines. I got to do ADR, I think, 3 times for my 2 episodes, which was crazy. And it was really exciting. And I'm still so proud of being a part of that show. I booked that back in 2017, end of 2017. To me, I'm like, oh my gosh, that was so long ago. I haven't booked anything. I'm so bad. I suck. But no, I don't suck. But during that time frame, I booked Dear White People. And then I actually think I just had a couple months that were amazing. I did Dear White People. Then I booked a commercial for Tinder. LOL. That was non-union. And then like literally the week after Tinder, I booked a commercial that has been the biggest blessing of my life. And it was the reason I had to join SAG. I was a must join. I had to go to SAG the day I booked it so I could film the next day. And that joining fee is no joke.
Nope.
But I highly recommend keep your day job so you can pay your joining fee with whatever you book, because you want to join the union. Join the union. Join SAG-AFTRA. Help make our actors stronger, because for every actor that accepts an extremely low paying role, it takes a job away from someone else, and it devalues us so much, and it just shows companies that we're not worth a lot and that we're replaceable. And that's not true. It's not true whatsoever. So that's how I joined. And on this commercial, it was great. I played an older sister. It was my first time working with a female director. Mm-hmm. And that was so great. She was so sweet and just a really great director. really fun commercial. And I worked my one day. But again, you've heard this story. I mean, I've worked my whole life for this. Okay. It's for a prescription medication. It was in the process of being approved by the FDA at the time they shot the commercial, and they were very confident that it was going to get approved. Well, it didn't. And so they have been fighting to try and get the correct dosage and like all this random doctory stuff that I don't really know anything about. When I did that commercial, I was expecting it to run immediately and for them to like run it. And at first it was kind of disappointing. It was exciting because I still got like the SAG minimum hold fee. So I think that was around $600 total before taxes, before agents and managers. So I made about net, I made about $300 from it every 3 months for the first 2 years, I think. Then there was a renegotiation and that hold fee went up.
Nice.
And now just over 50% of my income actually comes from that commercial.
Really?
That still has not run.
Wow.
Just
and hopefully eventually it runs.
Oh, yeah. And part of the renegotiation was double SAG scale. So once it does run, I will be making double scale.
That's amazing.
And I just have to say, like, you never know where your blessing is going to come from. And by no means am I a household name. I don't book shows every week. But comes to the end of the day, I mean, I make 100% of my money. I teach piano, voice, and acting lessons, which is passing on knowledge that I've worked my whole life for. And I really enjoy it. It's rewarding. It helps me keep my skills up. And it just, you know, it's just, you know, as you teach, you learn. And it's a really enjoyable process most of the time, not all the time, of course. And then obviously, you know, being able to audition and things like that. I also produce music. And last year, I got my first paid production gig as a music producer. And I produced an artist album, which was a huge deal. And so, and even when I was doing princessing, that's still, we performed.
Oh, yeah. That was an acting job.
We sang. It was 100% an acting job. What I didn't include in this story is that after I got into UCLA, I did go for one quarter, but I quickly realized I could not do it all. And I realized I was going into debt for a backup plan. And I didn't need to go into debt for a backup plan. I realized that was kind of stupid. And my parents, luckily, actually really encouraged me. And they said, yeah, you can always go back to school. You can't always follow your dreams. One day you're going to have more responsibilities and you might as well do it now. And so when I first dropped out of school, I became a nanny for a family who is near and dear to my heart. I'm still so close with them. Other than that, that's the only time I've had a job that does not have to do with my profession. I also want to say that those day jobs along the way, the people you meet there might be the thing that sustains you in this city.
You have to create those connections. It's like vital in LA. Well, anywhere really, but the film industry.
Oh yeah, absolutely anywhere. The industry in general, whenever you're, you know, going after something. And I would say it's important to have friends that are in your industry who understand your life. And it's also important to have friends who aren't in the industry.
Yes. Love that.
Because
I feel that way
if
too.
If you are only friends with people who are actors, like it's really easy sometimes to become resentful, have jealousy. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I'm guilty of being upset because a friend of mine booked a commercial that we both had a callback for.
Yeah.
And is that the right thing to do? I mean, technically no, but I'm allowed to feel feelings and I'm human and I'm not always going to be perfect. And it's not like I ever took it out on any of my friends, but I had to deal with those feelings inside myself. And because jealousy is going to happen in this industry, it is. But if you let it stay inside of you and you don't express it in some way, not to the person, but I mean, write a song about it, journal about it, you know, make a gratitude list, whatever it is that helps you, talk to your therapist about it if you have access to therapy, which unfortunately not everyone does. Oh, this is the best part about the union. I have health insurance. I have amazing health insurance. People cannot believe. I'll just say it. So I pay a little over $300 every 3 months. So that means it's a little over $100 a month.
Not bad at all.
And no, not bad at all. My deductible is $500. And if I go to the Motion Picture Television Fund UCLA Health Clinics and get referrals through them, then my deductible is actually $0.
Really?
My office co-pays are $25. Union health insurance is number one. Anyway, you know, suffice to say that every step of the journey is extremely important. Don't take it for granted. Like, oh man, and also believe in yourself. know that you were, when you go to an audition, you were invited there. It's cliche. People say, oh, you know, they're rooting for you. They really are. They want you to be the one. They're not rooting for you to suck. Like, they want their job to be easy. They want you to do a good job. The best advice I ever got is prepare for your audition as if it was your first day on set.
I like that.
If you're not preparing like it's going to be your first day on set, then you're not going to book the job. I can guarantee you that.
That's really, really good.
Well, unless you, I mean, I did flub a line. So don't freak out if you make a mistake. Cause like my first recurring co-star happened and I flubbed a line in the audition. It's not about lines. And my manager tells me this all the time. I have a great manager. Shout out to my manager, David Cole at the Cole Group. And then my agents, Milton, Nicole and Caitlin over at AEF. Got to give them little shout outs. They're great. My manager tells me this all the time. He's like, Alyssa, it does not, lines do not matter. Emotion matters. You being in the scene matters. If you flub a line, it doesn't matter. Like, that's why they do multiple takes. Like, it's not a big deal. Even in an audition, you flub a line, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm living proof of that because your girl messed up her line royally.
Awesome. Well, where can our listeners find you?
So go ahead, search me up on Instagram. My username is just J-U-S-T, Alyssa, E-L-L-Y-S-A. Same on TikTok. Def follow me there. I'm a fun time. And then you can find me on Spotify, Apple Music, everywhere, YouTube, by just searching my name, E-L-L-Y-S-A. That's it. And then what other platforms are there? Like YouTube and stuff? Yeah, just search my first name and you'll find me. Facebook, same thing. Just search my first name, E-L-L-Y-S-A. My like page will pop up. But yeah, and then you can watch me on Adam Ruins Everything, the episode about the internet. And hopefully on this commercial soon.
Yeah, awesome. I'll let everybody know when it finally airs. Well, Alyssa, thank you so much for coming on. I think just invaluable things have been said. Listeners are going to love it.
Oh my gosh. No, seriously, thank you so much for having me.
I always love our talks, so we'll see each other soon.
Oh, and if you're listening and you want to be an actor, don't let people stop you. You can do it. Also, if you end up hating auditioning, be a casting director because you still get to act every day because you're the reader. That's
it. Oh, true. Yes, I like that. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 2. I would love to hear about what you're enjoying about the podcast, what you're learning, or if you want to hear about anything specific. So please either leave me an email at everydayactorpod@gmail.com or leave a comment in the reviews and I'll make sure to include as much as I can that you guys are looking for. If you want to hear more, please hit subscribe, leave us a rate, leave us a review. It all helps keep this podcast afloat and get new listeners. Next time on the podcast, we have a very exciting guest. We're going to have Jack Seaver McDonald. Jack and I met at school, and since then, he has flown in Hollywood. I'm so excited for you to hear his journey and to hear all about his experience on Netflix's new show, Never Have I Ever. That's right, he's on their new Netflix show. So tune in next time to episode 3, which is already up, to hear all about his journey. Our theme music is brought to you by Alyssa, who you did get to hear from today. To hear more of her music, please check her out on Spotify. All of the information is in the show notes. Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you next time. I wanna fit in.